Welcome to the Wampa's Lair Podcast. Deep in the bowels of the frozen ice caverns of Hoth, our hosts, Carl Eclair and Jason Hunt, discuss all things Star Wars. So join the conversation and hang out here in the Wampa's Lair.
Hey everybody, and welcome back to another exciting episode of the Wampa's Lair Podcast. This is episode number 244, Family in Star Wars. I'm, as always, one of your hosts, Jason Hunt, and with me, the Han Solo to my Luke Skywalker. We're kicking it old school today. We've got Carl Eclair.
Hey Jason, I'm glad to be here.
Hey Carl, I'm so glad to be back.
I know, I've always wanted to talk about, gosh, you know what's crazy? We've been doing this for almost 6 years. I was just thinking about that, by the way. We're only 2 months away from our six-year anniversary. And I'm sure that'll get old fast.
We're
when people
podcast old.
Yeah, I know. We are podcast old. And I was thinking, you know, 244 episodes till we finally get specifically to this topic of family in Star Wars. Because it's such a huge element of what it means to be the Star Wars universe.
Huge.
A huge part of Star Wars is family.
Yes.
So that's what we're going to be talking about in this episode is what is a family in Star Wars? How do we see family portrayed in Star Wars? And just talk a little bit about that. But before we get into anything, I want to give a shout out to our Patreon supporter for this episode of the Wampa's Lair Podcast. Oh, the music swells for him. We would like to give a shout out to Brandon Boylan, the unofficial official sponsor of this episode of the Wampa's Lair Podcast. Thank you, Brandon. Thanks to your contribution, Anakin's been freed.
Yes.
Sorry, that's what the music's from. Whoa, what happened there? Sorry about that.
Oh, man. I love how the music swelled there. That was just...
It was perfect.
So epic for Brandon.
Yes.
I almost feel sad for the other patrons that we mentioned, but... I know I want that entrance. Brandon, I'm jealous. All right. But yes, thank you, Brandon. You have saved another wounded Wampa with your donation and apparently also freed the slaves. So congratulations on that.
Before we get into this topic of family in Star Wars, we had a matchup from... our last episode, well, 2 episodes ago, essentially, because we had to do our quick turnaround there because of your vacation last week.
Yes.
But we had this matchup, again, kind of going with the Disney theme of Star Wars characters, and we put a double matchup of Kanan and Ezra versus Kylo Ren, and the Larians had much to say, didn't they, Jason?
Oh, boy, did they ever. So let's go ahead and... breeze through these quickly here. On Facebook, Brent Sweeting says Kanan and Ezra. Loradori MacArthur gives it to Kylo. Although he says Ezra could fall to the dark side in order to defeat Kylo. Paolo Buffa gives it to Kylo Ren. Brendan Boylan gives it to Kanan and Ezra. Travis Magruder gives it to Kylo based on experience. Matt Bunter gives it to Kylo. Jazz, our buddy, can't make up his mind. A kitten, apparently, is who he's giving this matchup to. Jazz, make up your mind sometimes. I love you, buddy. No? Jeffrey Beaumont gives it to Kanan and Ezra. Ben Brophy gives it to Kanan and Ezra as well. Kyle Taylor gives it to Kylo Ren. Ian Statsny says, given the right circumstances, either side could win, so I'm going to say Jar Jar Binks because someone has to win. Thanks, Ian. Brian Bailey gives it to Kylo Ren. Katie Horn gives it to Kylo. Hunter Grigger gives it to says that Ren would dominate at first, but when Kanan is about to be killed, Ezra will go all dark side and summon a monster to kill Kylo. So he gives it to Kylo and Kanan, or excuse me, Ezra and Kanan. Jay Schmidt gives it to Kylo Ren. Cody Murphy, Kanan and Ezra. Dave Laidlaw gives it to Kylo. Thomas Davis, Kylo. Cameron Simmons, Kylo. Damon Krasinski gives it to Kanan and Ezra. Kevin Wong, Kylo Ren. Josh Rozek, Kanan and Ezra. And Karsten Peterson gives it to Kylo Ren. And then we got an email from Patrick, who gives it to Kanan. Not Kanan and Ezra, just Kanan. Because he's grown in strength due to his blindness and was the apprentice to the Bendu and survived Vader. So that gives us a final Larian tally here. We got 12 for Kylo, 10 for Kanan and Ezra, 1 for a kitten, and 1 for Jar Jar. So what say you, Carl?
I give it to the kitten. I'm with Jess.
Mm, yes.
am I allowed to do that? Can I cop out? oh, Jazz, you got called out, bro. Yeah, I'm going to go with Kylo. I mean, I love Kanan. Kanan is one of my favorite Star Wars characters, period. But that being said, as much as I love Kanan, Kanan is someone who got like half of a training as a Padawan, figures out the rest on his own. He's not some, you know, like innately good force user in the way that Kylo is. He's got Skywalker blood. Not to mention that Kylo, before he's Kylo, is trained by Luke Skywalker and is responsible for the fall of Luke's Jedi Academy. Now, yes, I'm sure he had help. He didn't do it all single-handedly. But that being said, that's a pretty huge feat. And I think especially where Kylo is going to be at the end of 8, I think we're going to see him even more powerful. I think they're going to want to make up for, right? I think Kylo gets a lot of unnecessary flack because he lost to Rey.
Yeah.
I think, I actually hope he beats Rey in episode 8, just to like when he's at his full strength, I hope it shows that like he is like innately much stronger than her. And then 9, we'll see what happens. But, that
right.
being said, I think Kylo, I mean, Ezra's, we all know that I'm not a huge Ezra fan. Ezra is, to me, the most overpowered character in all of Star Wars. I think they did that for the sake of really engaging us and making us excited about him in Rebels. I think he's too powerful. I've gone on record with that before. So that being said, as much as I love Kanan, and Ezra's fine, I think he... You know, he's going to bring something to the table. But, I don't know. I think Kylo takes care of both of them relatively easily, too. Not a complete, like, blowout, but I think Kylo easily has the upper hand the whole fight. So I give it to Kylo.
And as much as it pains me, I'm also going to give this one to Kylo. It's largely the Skywalker element. I mean, let's be honest, he's, you know, related to Darth Vader. He was trained by Luke Skywalker, and he's the son of Han Solo and Leia. I'm pretty sure he's got a stacked deck to begin with. I agree. He let his guard down when he lost to Rey. He let his guard down. He was trying to... turn her or get her to join him or something. He let his guard down and got surprised. But he wouldn't have that happen with Kylo and Ezra, I don't think. So there's something about Rey, because, you know, we've seen what girl.
Rey, these are your first Rey? Steps.
Rey. Sorry. Okay, I'll stop that. but yeah, no, I'm going to go with Kylo in this one. I think you're right. He's going to be much more powerful for what we're about to see in The Last Jedi. I mean, you've got to have something dark and scary to counteract the adorableness of all the porgs that are going to be everywhere.
I can't wait. So, that's my primary target. With Jeepers, only a week away for Force Friday.
Oh my gosh, I forgot about that.
Yeah, that's a week from – well, we're recording – well, so technically tomorrow at midnight, a week from tomorrow at midnight, I will be going into Toys R Us with my good friend Greg and getting everything porg that I can find. That's all I want is porgs.
Porgs, 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 porgs.
Did you
porgs.
Hear the sounds? Did you?
I did.
Yeah. So how adorable are they? And did you see that little blip they put on the Star Wars Instagram page today? That was great. Where they're chasing BB-8. Oh, it's so funny. You missed it?
I did.
Oh my gosh, it's so funny. Hold on, I'm gonna. That's worth. It's so cute sounding. Let me just pull that up really quick in case you missed this. I think it was on their Facebook page as well. But I'm a huge Instagram fan.
I bet it worked
fan.
All day, Carl.
So have I.
But I don't. Well, have
what is that? Wait, hold on. Wait, that's not something to brag about, Carl.
But I don't have the ability to surf the web on my job.
All right, here we go.
Oh my gosh.
The they're so cute. Did you I know you couldn't probably see it while I was playing it, but if you guys haven't seen this, I recommend checking this out. It's just so cute.
Is this one of those animated things they've been doing?
Yeah, or? It's called Star Wars Blips. It's one of these like little animated shorts they're doing. And it starts with a porg walking by, and then a few porgs are carrying just BB-8's dome, and then they put him together off screen, and he rolls away as they go chasing after him.
Oh my gosh!
Oh god, it's so cute.
Let the marketing begin.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, seriously, these porgs are selling The Last Jedi right now.
Oh, I know it.
And apparently we're okay with that.
right. Oh, it's so good. I love it.
But yeah, all that to say, because of all the porg cuteness, we're going to have something dark in episode 8. So right. Kylo's going to be really BA, and I'm going to give it to Kylo. So that gives us a final tally.
Way to bring it back this. Home.
Yeah, we're going to give this final tally on this matchup of 14 for Kylo, 10 for Kanan and Ezra, 1 for a kitten, and 1 for Jar Jar. Surprised nobody voted for a porg. So, although we may have to do a cuteness poll between porgs and Wicket.
Oh, yeah.
And I just about gave Teresa Delgado a heart attack with that one, having to make that decision.
Was there anything else cuter than porgs and Ewoks? I mean, BB-8's cute, too. He's got a cuteness factor.
Right. That's true.
R2 has cute moments, but he's got a foul mouth, so he's not that cute.
So. R2's snarky.
He is. Yeah, he's perfect word for it. Anyway, we've got another poll for you at the we'll talk about it at the end of the episode. Again, it's going to be following with this theme of essential elements of Star Wars. So stick around for the end if you'd like to hear what that is and participate, of course.
I know I'm interested.
I know I am too. Oh boy.
So we'll stick around for the end of the episode.
Yeah, well, and in order to get there, we should probably talk about our topic.
Oh, yeah. So what is our topic, Carl? Although we kind of already hinted at it.
Kind of said it. But
right.
It's porgs.
Yes.
Yes. The importance of porgs in Star Wars marketing.
Yes.
Actually, you know, that would be fun sometime. I'd love to get somebody on here that like does marketing for a living or has background in marketing. I know very little about it. I mean, my job, the jobs I've had in the past few years, like call for some level of marketing. But I mean, I'm in no way formally trained and I'm not very good at it, which you could tell if you saw me at any of my jobs. But that being said, I think it'd be really fun to get someone on here with a marketing background to talk a little bit about even just the resurgence of marketing since Force Awakens. I mean, you can easily look at, you know, it'd be fun to look at the marketing they did in, you know, the OT. And then again, when they brought back Phantom Menace, you know, just essentially when they're bringing these things on, like that'd be something really fun to look at. So
that would be cool.
If you are listening and you are big on marketing or you have a background in that and you'd be interested in doing something like that, definitely reach out to us and let us know. That'd be a lot of fun to have someone on who can talk, you know, a little bit more I don't want to say intelligibly, not that we'd be stupid, but somebody who has a little bit more depth of knowledge of how that stuff works. That'd be really great to have you on.
Yes. Yes, indeed. Someone who actually knows what they're talking about. Because we can sort of give our thoughts on it as outside observers, but we're not experts.
No. No. The only thing I'm an expert on is porg anatomy. They're cute.
That's all you need to know about porgs.
You know who loves porgs?
Carl.
Foden and Bead.
There we go.
Anyway, so let's talk a little bit about family in Star Wars. You know, Carrie Fisher has been very adamant right, about the importance of family in Star Wars. I mean, I think,
yes,
especially since, you know, the press release campaign, if you will, for Force Awakens, Carrie Fisher talks a lot about, right? Because a common question she's going to get, or even Harrison Ford got during those press junkets, was, why do you think Star Wars has stood the test of time, right? And for Carrie, she's constantly talked about its importance to family, right? How families watch it together, they pass it on to each other. And it, you know, it's for families because it's about families.
Right.
And you know, it's really like a lifeblood element of Star Wars.
Mm-hmm. It's the familial ties, whether blood or not, that are formed in these movies, these shows, really drive the story, really drive the characters. And it's so integral and woven into the importance of these characters that it's really hard to not talk about family at all when you're talking Star Wars.
Right. Yeah. You know, I think before we really hop into the nuts and bolts of this, though, I think it's important to look at, you know, what is family according to Star Wars, right? Like, if you look at Star Wars in general, the films primarily, but even some of the, you know, added pieces of Rebels and Clone Wars, you know, I always like to say, what is George Lucas trying to say? I mean, it's still his big creation. I mean, yes, others are now playing in the sandbox, but if you look, I mean, Star Wars has been around for 40 years. George has been, you know, the sole element of it for almost 35 of those years.
Right.
So, you know, and George is very clear, too, that this is a story about family. So, like, let's take just a few moments just to look at how George Lucas understands family. And I think for those of you who maybe don't know a lot about George Lucas, again, and I know, I think you finished it, Jason, the George Lucas biography from just a couple of years ago by, is it Brian Jay? Is that the author's name?
I don't remember. Unfortunately, I didn't finish it. I stopped halfway through and I need to start it over again.
Oh, it's so good.
I know.
I'm going to double check. George. Yeah, I think it's Brian Jay. It is. Yep. Brian Jay Jones. Is the author's name. So if you have not had a chance to read that biography, highly recommend it. But it's just interesting to see that, you know, George grew up in a very, like, typical kind of suburban family of America in the 1950s, right? Where, you know, I mean, they were a close-knit group. They did things together. And, you know, George's father, I mean, I think a lot of us know the story, right? George's father ran a local stationery store in Modesto. He wanted to pass that along to George, but George had bigger dreams than that. And I think we see a lot of that reflected specifically in the original films. And, you know, how George sees family is something integral to what forms you, but also needs to give you the freedom to grow beyond that and grow into different ways. And I think in Star Wars specifically, family is this community that supports and looks out for each other, right? I mean, that's kind of just the general crux, I think, of what Star Wars is telling us a family is. Because again, we're going to get into a little bit of, like, how does Star Wars present family to us, you know, through hereditary means, but also how does it present us family beyond just, you know, bloodlines. And I think the essential element George is talking about is this idea that it's this nuclear group that supports and looks out for you.
Yeah. Yeah. There are these core groups that you obviously, you know, we'll see, several of them in Star Wars. You know, obviously we had the big three, Luke, Leia, and Han. We got Anakin, Obi-Wan, and Padme in the prequels. We've got Rey, Finn, and Poe to some extent in this sequel trilogy. And then, of course, there's the actual family ties that we're going to get into as well. You know, Vader, Anakin, Luke, and Leia, that sort of thing. You know, but it is generally these small nuclear groups that hold on to each other, whether by blood or by relationship. That they look out for each other, they accept each other, they love and care for each other, and that's this family that's created. And we are witness to quite a few of them in Star Wars.
Yeah, You know, and I think to some degree, Star Wars sometimes blurs the line of friendship and family. And I think that's I think that's on purpose. But right, I think he sees. I think the distinction between just a friend and somebody you might consider family, right? I mean, like we're talking as part of a Star Wars family. You and I both, Jason, right? We've become part of something much larger than just ourselves. And I think the distinction between just a family and a friendship, like I don't say my Star Wars friends, right? I mean, you commonly will hear people say my Star Wars family. And I think that the difference there would be it's this common love, but also this common loyalty to each other, right?
Yeah.
Something that no matter the distance or time, there is this strong bond that exists. And I think that's, you know, again, that percolates out into the fan community beyond just the films.
Which is remarkable. It's one of the few fan groups that I've seen, one of the few franchises that I've seen that has any of this sort of, you know, almost immediate cohesion to any level like that, which is remarkable. And I've been to several different conventions and Comic Cons and seen many of these other groups interacting, and there's always, oh, hey, there's my Doctor Who friends or my Pokemon friends or whatever, and it's all this stuff. But when it comes to Star Wars, it's always talked about it like family, and we're always so quick to latch on and be a part of that family and identify as that sort of family, which is something that's very unique in the geek community. So I like it.
I think, you know, one other thing about, you know, what does it mean to be family is, you know, I think in Star Wars, family are people that they kind of see the best in someone else, and they work to bring that out. And they oftentimes put things on the line to do that, right? Like I'm thinking Luke redeeming his father, right? He puts a lot on the line. Leia going back to Cloud City when Luke's hanging there, right? She's putting a lot on the line. Anakin and Padme making the decision to go to Geonosis to save Obi-Wan, right? This is – and again, that is certainly blurring the lines a bit of friendship and family, but – there's something about like you put everything on the line, right? You think of like good parents. Good parents sometimes just put their own comfort and pleasure on the line or put it aside for the goodness of their children. That is, you know, that's good familial bonding.
Yeah. And it's funny you bring that up because that's a perfect segue into talking about, if we want to jump into that, the actual bloodline families that we see in Star Wars. Do you want to jump into that now or do you have more to say?
Because we're going to be talking about this a little bit in depth in a second, but also just really quick. I think something else that we learn about family in Star Wars is that they're not perfect, right?
Right.
Specifically looking at the highlighted like hereditary family of Star Wars, the Skywalkers, right?
Right.
The Skywalker family is imperfect.
That's for sure.
And I like that. Like, I like that, you know, George gives us an idealized look at what family can and should be, but also reconciling the fact that they're not going to be perfect. And that's typified in the story of Anakin and, you know, in the fact, and even now into the sequel trilogy where, you know, another Skywalker has fallen, right? There is imperfection in family. And that's an important part of Star Wars as well when it comes to dealing with family, is the fact that it's not going to be perfect, but good families work through these things, right? They work through them, suffering and all, and figure them out. And sometimes the imperfection of certain family leads to the formation of another family, right? You know, when you are part of something that's very, very broken and you really want a family, you inevitably create one for yourself outside of that, right? Like, not to be like super deeper or, you know, like dark here, but right, if you grew up in a broken home, you know, whatever that may mean, you inevitably are going to seek family in a different way. A very extreme example be like, you know, gangs in Los Angeles or something in the 1980s, right? Like these are young men and women who grew up in very broken environments, and they sought, companionship and family outside of what was broken. And sadly, sometimes those things are also broken. But right, Star Wars really hits home about the importance of family and reconciling that they're going to be imperfect.
Right, yeah. And it's, the imperfection of the Skywalkers is clearly out for all to see. And it looks like we might be getting even more of that as we move into The Last Jedi as well. But, you know, it's interesting that as imperfect as the Skywalkers are, they still are the core family that we see and follow in Star Wars. They are, you know, imperfect, but they do, at the end of the day, love each other. And I guess that's probably, you know, a good thing to keep in mind with our own families. Imperfections and all.
Right. So yeah, I mean, let's look at the typifying point of that, which is the Skywalkers, right? And let's not forget the matriarch of the Skywalker family, Shmi.
Yes.
Right? I mean,
the most pure member of the Skywalker family.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. I mean, the first element of actual family we see in Star Wars, I would say, actually in all facets of that word, is Shmi and Anakin. And that's the perfect word for it. Again, it's something pure. And it's something extremely selfless. And that type of family, you know, the way that this family works, Shmi puts everything about herself aside for the goodness of Anakin. And this is a good and proper relationship of family. You know, the mother cares for her son. She loves him selflessly and wants nothing more than his freedom, both literally because he's a slave, but also I think even more beyond that, the freedom of the ability to go seek his dreams and fulfill his dreams. Shmi and Anakin are a very small family unit that really show to us the, you know, the goodness of what family is at its core.
Right. And it's interesting that she's the matriarch because she's the one that the Force chose to, you know, be the one to raise the chosen one. That she's the one who, you know, as she says, there was no father. She carried him. She gave birth. She raised him. She can't explain what happened. And, you know,
took her lies and just made them like in the third person.
I know. Right. I did. But there has to be something special about her in order for that to be even possible. Because the Force, you know, at least in Legends, was reacting against the experiments of recreating life that Darth Plagueis was doing, those experiments. And so it was looking for something pure, something good to counteract that. And Shmi, for whatever reason, was the one who was chosen by the Force. So it's, you know, there had to be something special about her, something pure and selfless, which is what we see in her completely. You know, as soon as Anakin is given the opportunity to leave Tatooine, she ensures that he takes that opportunity. You know, she lets him make his own choice, but she definitely tells him, hey, This is your path. This is your choice. And she basically sends him off and telling him to not look back, knowing full well she could never, ever see him again.
Right.
So. Yeah.
And interestingly enough, and I don't know how uncommon this is, but George himself had a very good relationship with his mother, and not that he didn't with his father, but again, his more strained relationship with his father. So, you know, again, interesting that that's going to be the strained type of relationship in the family.
Right.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, I think so right off the bat, Star Wars gives us a good and proper sense of what a family ought to be.
Yes.
And then that family grows into Anakin and Padme.
Yes.
A very different type of family, right? This one is driven by passion. But that passion is forbidden, right? So the kind of perfection, I mean, nothing is, yes, nothing is evidently perfect, but Shmi and Anakin, in a way, have a perfect familial relationship. Anakin and Padme are kind of doomed from the start because it's imperfection due to its secretiveness, right?
Right, right.
It's doomed from the start because they're not being honest about their relationship to others.
Right. It's one of those things where if you can't be open and honest about it, if you can't, you know, if the entire foundation that your relationship is based on is secrecy, the minute it gets out, it becomes somehow bad or strained or stressful, and that's never good. So they obviously are very, you know, as we'll see, you know, later on throughout the Clone Wars and in Revenge of the Sith, they're obviously very much in love with each other. That, you know, by the end of it, they're very much definitely want to be this married couple. They want to be a family. And when Anakin finds out she's pregnant, he's like, yes, this is the greatest thing that's ever happened to me. And he doesn't care the consequences if it comes out at that point. But up until that point, it's something that's, you know, very hushed and secretive. And it's, you know, a little secret's not something that's, well, it's not so little a secret, I should say. And that's not a good thing to have as the basis for your relationship.
Right. Yeah.
So it is, you're right, it's doomed. They're doomed to be star-crossed lovers, essentially.
Yeah.
So.
You know, and again, that's why I love the episode, I think it's like The Rise of Clovis or something. It's from one, you know, the Lost Missions season of Clone Wars, right? When, Anakin, you know, basically beats the crap out of Clovis in front of her, and she's, you know, mortified. And she says something to him, I don't remember it verbatim, but something along the lines of, like, our relationship's never going to work because it's in secret, right? And, well, and also we don't trust each other.
Right.
Right. Well, you don't trust me, at least, she says to Anakin. But Anakin and Padme's relationship is certainly one of love. It's young, passionate love, for sure. That in and of itself is not a bad thing. And again, I'll take any chance I can to mention the scene on the balcony in Revenge of the Sith, cause I love it. but that scene, you're right. Like, you basically alluded to it, right? I mean, they're standing there dreaming about this life together. What they want is very good, right? They want to have a family. They want to be together and raise this child that they're going to be having. But that's going to be very hard to do when you're so secretive, because there's still a secret, and that's the problem. You know, I mean, they have to come out clean about this, and that's where the imperfection starts to sprinkle in, right? Families that carry secrets aren't as healthy as those that don't. I mean, it kind of goes without saying, but right. I mean, a lot of families carry their secrets, and when those secrets come out, they always tend to have negative consequences, right? And that's not to say that, like, you're required to tell everybody all your dirty laundry, but, you know, to some degree, there has to be a level of honesty that exists in family. And Padme and Anakin, unfortunately, never really take that claim until it's too late.
It's interesting you bring up that Clovis arc from the Clone Wars, the last missions, the Lost Missions episodes. And you're right, because this relationship is based in a secret, they don't, you know, sometimes they have trouble trusting each other because they're like, well, what happens if you get mad at me? Are you going to blow this? Are you going to reveal everything? Are you going to take me down? You know, that's not necessarily what they're saying, but it is one of those things where if it's based on a secret and things start going wrong, trust is the first thing that goes, because you're always looking over your shoulder. Are they going to keep the secret? Is this going to stay private, or is this going to start, you know, spilling out? So.
Right. Yeah. So, you know, is obviously imperfect as they are, they still create something wonderful. And that's Luke and Leia.
Yes.
Even though their relationship in a sense is imperfect, the core of that relationship, is still grounded in love, and that love creates Luke and Leia. Thank God, because they redeem the galaxy.
Exactly.
But Luke and Leia have a very, you know, again, it's a different aspect of family, right? Shmi and Anakin, it's a mother, you know, it's a child and parent relationship. Now this is, you know, Anakin and Padme is a spouse's relationship and family. And now we have siblings. And Luke and Leia, I think in a way capture some element of that purity that Shmi and Anakin had.
I would agree with that.
Yeah.
After the initial kiss.
Right. Well, they're knowingly siblings. Right?
Yes.
You know, there's something very compassionate about their familial relationship, and they're extremely supportive of one another. I mean, again, this is all really typified in that scene they have together in the Ewok village, you know, when they're, you know, hanging out on the little walkway there. But when it becomes clear and they, you know, Leia recognizes that Luke is indeed her brother, they really respect one another's roles, right? Like Leia really understands who Luke is. Like, you're a Jedi, like that's who you have to be, you know, and Luke is recognizing her, but you're so much more than just this, you know, rebel fighter or rebel leader. Like, you have those powers too, right? I mean, they really support one another and respect what they're both doing, right? Like Leia doesn't understand why he's going to go confront Vader. Right. I mean, she doesn't seem to refer to him as that. Like, I don't think Leia, I mean, we get that in the novel Bloodline, right? I don't think she ever really saw Vader as a father figure.
No.
Which, again, very different from the old Legends canon, right? There's I think it's in the novel Truce at Bakura, where Anakin's Force Ghost shows up and basically asks forgiveness of Leia, and she gives it to him. We don't seem to have anything like that in the new canon. But, you know, Leia doesn't understand what Luke's doing, but she doesn't try to stop him, right? Like, she's not like, I'm not going to let you go. Like, you're doing the wrong thing. She doesn't get it, but she respects what he's doing. Mm-hmm. And Luke clearly respects what she's doing. And he trusts that even though he's leaving to do something else, he trusts that she's still going to get her job done, right? Like, that's really what, you know, family members do for each other, is they recognize your role and encourage you to fulfill that role. And again, like this is showing to us what good, you know, sibling relationship might look like.
What I can't wait for is what that's going to look like in The Last Jedi. We're going to have a couple of siblings who have basically taken on the galaxy and survived, finally reuniting after years and years and years. Leia's been looking for Luke. Luke's been, you know, hiding away. And I want to see what happens. I want to see her smack him and then give him a hug. I want that to be like the introduction of the, like, he walks in sort of sheepishly, he comes out from behind Rey, and she walks over to him, looks at his face, slaps him, and then hugs him. You know, I want that to happen, you know? But I want to see how this developed, because we really don't see a lot of their brother-sister relationship in full,
right,
in the films, because they only really know that they're siblings towards the end of Return of the Jedi, although their interactions largely throughout the trilogy are very brother-sister-like. Even though there's the kissing that happens on occasion. But largely they behave like siblings. But the knowledge of that definitely deepened their relationship quite a bit in Return of the Jedi. There was I felt like there was like a deepening and a larger, a bigger commitment towards each other that came about because of that. And I want to see how that developed, and I want to see what happens when the two of them finally come back together in The Last Jedi. And I'm hoping we get that scene. Yeah. So,
well, again, right. Like the Legends canon has tons of them being siblings, right? Like, we see a lot of the ways that that happened.
Mm-hmm.
And again, I think we're going to get this in episode 8, but and if not, I'll be disappointed, but I want to hear in some way, shape, or form that Luke did do some Jedi training with Leia, right? I mean, that was very clearly the innuendo we got by the end of Return of the Jedi, that Luke's first student was going to be Leia.
Yeah.
I think it would make sense that, like, it never is completed, even in the Legends canon, right? Like, it takes a long time for her to become a Jedi Knight because she's so busy setting up the New Republic. And it's clear that that's still the case for Leia. But I would like to think that he's, you know, that they worked at least a little bit after Return of the Jedi.
Well, there's evidence of that in The Force Awakens when she senses Han's death.
Sure.
You know?
Sure, but she also was able to sense Luke calling to her in Cloud City, right? Like long before any of that. So that's not new per se. And I don't mean to like shoot that right down, but that in and of itself
isn't enough. Right.
It's not enough, right?
Yeah, so you're right, but yeah, no, I mean, she's at least not let it go.
Yeah. You know, another thing to a key element of family in Star Wars is, of course, the redemption of Vader by Luke, right? Mm-hmm. This Anakin and Luke relationship, really. And, you know, again, we talked about this a little bit earlier, but the idea that families are imperfect. And we see that the sins of the father are redeemed by the son. Right. You know, old mythological stories, specifically like biblical stories, they often have language. And again, I'm thinking of the Bible explicitly because it's what I know best. But in the Bible, there's oftentimes where like how the sins of, you know, this generation will visit to the next generation and blah, blah, blah. Right. Like the idea that the mistakes of one family unit will affect those that come later. And I remember when I was teaching some of these stories, my kids would be like, well, that seems kind of vindictive. God's a jerk. And I was like, no, it actually shows like the intelligence of these writers and their sense of psychology that when families screw up and make really bad mistakes, those mistakes affect the children, like whether you like it or not. And it's not to like cast further blame, but it's just the reality of like when something is broken, the effects of that, right? Like the ripple effect, it's going to have further effects. I mean, the fact that Anakin falls, right, and Padme dies is in a way as a result of that fall, right? That family is then disrupted, and Luke is stuck growing up on a backward planet. Well, Leia doesn't have it too bad, but in a way she does. She grows up though constantly fighting, right? Like Leia never really knew peace. Again, Leia is the strongest character in Star Wars, hands down.
pretty much.
Like, there's no doubt about it. I mean, she's been through the worst of it and always keeps fighting, unlike Luke. Again, so that better get explained well.
Better.
But, right, so, like, Luke, again, though, like, I think children, you know, eventually grow up and recognize that their parents are imperfect, right? They're just a couple of other human beings like the rest of us who make mistakes and who, you know, aren't perfect. And sometimes you have the opportunity to enrich their lives, right? Children have the opportunity to enrich the lives of their parents. And we really see that in the story of Luke and Anakin. Luke sees something beneath Darth Vader's veneer, right? This is a mask you're wearing. I know the truth of who you are. Come out.
Right.
And, you know, this is a child who's become an adult, who's become a man. Again, if you've ever listened to the Star Wars film commentaries with Sam Witwer over on Rebel Force Radio. Sam Witwer loves to say he's a man. He always refers to Luke as a man. He became a man. I love the way he says the word man. It's really great. He really sinks his teeth into the word man. But anyway, right? Like Luke is now,
we love Sam Witwer. Oh,
God, I would give anything to get him on this show, but alas, that'll probably never happen. Well, never say never.
Right. Never say never.
But anyway, right? Like Luke is someone who comes to terms with the imperfection of his father figure, but knows that there's more to him than that. And, right. And because of that can redeem him.
Right. Right. And he's identified, you know, and I'm going to bring this back to the scene that we've talked about countless times. He identifies the core of who Anakin was. You know, he was this Jedi. He was this good person. And all throughout, you know, his interactions with Vader in Return of the Jedi, he's poking and prodding and pulling at Anakin, trying to awaken him and get him to respond. And then when we get to, you know, the moment where he, walks in and steps into his identity, you know, I'm a Jedi, like my father before me. He identifies everything that he sees Anakin was. And Anakin responds. And that, you know, that identification of Anakin is one that is good. It is a redeemed version. It is a forgiven version of who he has become. And that gets the reaction, that gets the response deep within Vader of Anakin finally coming back to the surface, reasserting, you know, himself and saving his son. So, and that's one of the most, you know, dynamic family interactions that we've ever seen in Star Wars. And in all likelihood, it'll probably be, it's, you know, most relationships in our lives are not that dramatic. But it is one of the most dynamic and dramatic and impactful familial moments in the entire franchise. So it cannot be overhyped, I suppose.
Mm. Yeah. Well, it's the most dramatic part of Star Wars.
Yes.
And again, that the most dramatic and emotional high point of all of Star Wars is still the I am your father moment, which is, again, something steeped in family.
Yes.
So it has huge implications for the galaxy at large, obviously, but it's something intensely personal as well.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's nothing more personal than family.
Exactly.
There's no heavier baggage than family.
Well, is that true?
But just to wrap up the idea of these bloodline families that we get from the Skywalkers, I want to talk very briefly about Rey. I mean, yes, we still don't know if she's a Skywalker or not, and you know, we talked about this last episode, Jason, about whether or not she's going to be, and you know, either way, it has positives either way.
Yes.
But what's interesting, and I just want to key in on specifically her and Kylo Ren in The Force Awakens. Rey is someone whose character is defined by a longing for family, right? She wants nothing more than to be with her family, whoever that may be. Whereas Kylo Ren is a character who knows his family and rejects it.
Yeah. He wants nothing to do with it.
Right. And he idolizes the sins of his grandfather, right? Mm. That's the thing that he's obsessed with, is he's not obsessed with Anakin, his grandpa. He's obsessed with Darth Vader, who is his fallen grandfather.
It's that shiny helmet.
Yeah. So again,
it looks so cool. So obviously you want to emulate that guy, right?
I mean, yeah, that is fair. But it's so interesting. And, you know, the new sequel trilogy here, we get these two characters. And again, apparently we're going to find out about Rey's family in episode 8. And I don't know if that means we're going to find everything out or whatnot, but they have said, you know, in these Entertainment Weekly articles that the secret of her family is going to come out in episode 8. Again, I think these two characters, though, both Kylo and Rey, they have something to say about family, right? Yeah. Rey is somebody who's been on her own pretty much her entire life, you know, and all she wants is to belong to a family. Kylo Ren grew up with probably one of the most famous families in the galaxy, right? His uncle is the guy who is, you know, a Jedi master who started a new order. His father is Han Solo. His mother is Leia Organa, right? Like, he is probably one of the most famous babies to have ever lived. And, you know, he rejects all of that because he sees that as something weak, right? I mean, he refers to his father as weak and foolish.
Right.
So, you know, again, like, there is the understanding that the Skywalker family is, again, broken. It's being disrupted.
Yeah.
And something I was thinking about, and this is a tiny bit off topic from families, but I was thinking about this in light of what we did last week and talking again, just very quickly, that if Rey is a nobody, right? Like, she's not Rey Skywalker. I think it's still important to recognize that Luke Skywalker is going to be a pretty darn important character in episode 8. So even if Rey's a nobody, she can still, in a way, personify the Force coming into a Skywalker's life to shake him back into the story, right? So this is still a Skywalker tale, but maybe something outside of a Skywalker is acting on it, which is not unheard of. Look at Obi-Wan and Yoda. They're not Skywalkers, but they're needed to, you know, project Luke forward. Well, Luke has fallen into this place of remorse and regret, so now he needs something to shake him out of that. So it's still very much a Skywalker story. I mean, yes, Rey is the new heroine, but, right, like, she's going to have something to do with the Skywalker family, whether she's physically part of it or not.
Right, right. Yeah, she's definitely an important player with the Skywalkers. I mean, she's already made a connection with Leia. They've had a tender moment at the end of Force Awakens. She's on the hunt for Luke and has been told by Maz that, you know, the belonging she's seeking is not, you know, back in the past. It's ahead. And she says, Luke. And Maz just sort of nods. You know, it's Luke is going to be integral to her finding a place to belong, whether that's, you know, physical family as in, you know, bloodline, or if it's just, you know, a family kind of like, you know, what, you know, we had with the big three back in like A New Hope. You know, she's going to find a place to belong, and Luke is the key to that for her. So and that's driving a lot of her motivations, because she doesn't really have, you know, connections to the resistance at this point, to this greater fight. She's really kind of unaffiliated in a large sense, other than these few people that she's run across. So, but we already know that a lot of who she is going to be is tied up in this relationship she's about to start forming with Luke.
So, you know, that went longer than I thought, which is never a bad thing. So that's kind of our breakdown of the hereditary family of Star Wars, right? Like, which is typified in the Skywalkers. Mm-hmm. But I want to look, you know, again, kind of, we can look a little bit more quickly, but there is a much larger understanding of what family is in Star Wars outside of just hereditary means. Because again, you know, these broken Skywalker family elements are going to lead to different types of family being formed in its wake.
Right.
But I think one of the first and biggest family elements we get outside of blood relationship is Obi-Wan and Anakin.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and you were my brother, Anakin. I loved
you. I loved you. And we, you know, if you're like, but we didn't see that in the movies, watch the Clone Wars.
Yeah.
Clone Wars is really good. And, you know, you get to see a lot of this in the Clone Wars. A lot of this headbutting, this, you know, mentoring in a sense. But then towards the end, it's just they start to settle into this really nice sort of brotherly relationship. It's rocky because, you know, all brothers butt heads and get angry and, you know, cut each other's limbs off. No.
Yeah.
Maybe, I mean, not that much, but, you know, but it is, you're right. It is one of the most important and biggest relationships outside of the Skywalker family, especially for the prequel era. Anakin and Obi-Wan.
I will forever say that there are two monumental failures to the prequels that'll always be there for me. One is very poor depiction of Anakin as a character in episodes 2 and 3. Like, again, he's not likable enough to really care. And then secondly is that they don't show us enough on film. Yes, Clone Wars does a great job of it, but you shouldn't need a third party medium to mitigate that. They should have showed us on screen a stronger sense of their friendship. And that should have started in episode 2. Episode 2 is too, they're too like bickering, right? Like, they should already be fast friends by the end of episode 2. And we should have seen that at least a little bit there. But again, I still love the prequels, but to me, those are the only, if those two things existed, those films would have been flawless to me. But that being said, Obi-Wan and Anakin are this perfect relationship. Yes, like when Anakin leaves his mother, he is someone who's very much seeking a family because he knows what that means. He knows what that looks like. Yes, in a way, he gets that from Padme, but he also gets that from Obi-Wan. You know, he never had a brother. He never had any siblings, but Obi-Wan becomes like that to him because of everything they go to together, right? You know, it really bonds you in a very deep, personal way. And, you know, I love the element of Satine in Clone Wars. I absolutely love for what it is on its own, but also because of what it does for Obi-Wan and Anakin. When Anakin learns about Satine, just think how much that, like, probably increases Anakin's respect of Obi-Wan and sense of understanding. Even though he never openly admits to Obi-Wan about him and Padme, Obi-Wan right. knows what's going on. And, right, I think that that really creates an even stronger bond of, like, that's something brothers share, right? You know, Obi-Wan never told Anakin about that while he was his Padawan. He only tells him after he's become a knight. Granted, she was never part of the picture until then. But that, right. that being said, like, even if she had come about, you know, while they were still Master Padawan, I don't think he would have given him that detail. He shares that with him because he's a friend and he's a brother.
Exactly. Yeah, no, you're right. Because, you know, when you're Master and Padawan, this, there's certain things that aren't discussed, and that wouldn't have been. And while Obi-Wan still teaches Anakin after Anakin's become a knight, it's more from a, hey, let me show you the ropes sort of thing, as a brother would do. And, you know, and then since they're in that sort of relationship, he feels the ability to open up and talk a little bit about what happened between him and Satine. And it makes you wonder if he's doing that to try and entice Anakin to talk about what's going on between him and Padme, but Anakin doesn't take the bait.
Right. Well, in a way, he does. Well, the time when he confronts him in Anakin's room, again, the Clovis arc.
You know, yes.
Like, you know, it's normal to have these feelings. It's what do we do with them, right? Something like that. There's right. nothing going on, right? Like, it's like, yeah, you just gave yourself away. You wouldn't get that upset.
Right. Right.
Unless you were caught.
And meat cookie jar.
Yeah. but something else I thought worth noting in the prequels for family is just Jar Jar in general. You know, and I do this because I sincerely have come to love Jar Jar. And aww. You, yeah, yeah. Oh, Moi, I love you.
Oh, Moi, I love you. You almost got us killed. Are you brainless?
I speak.
The ability to speak does not make you intelligent. Now get out of here.
Oh, okay.
No, he says, no, Misa, stay.
Oh, that's right.
No, Misa, stay. Misa called Jar Jar Binks. Misa, your humble servant.
Oh, that won't be necessary.
Oh, but it is. Sister Mandy, by the gods, it is.
Get down.
Oh, no!
Get down. Sorry. That's not Qui-Gon.
No, it's not. But that's okay.
But I think Jar Jar, in a way, really adds to a sense of family in Star Wars. I mean, not so much with Qui-Gon per se, but definitely with like a little bit of Obi-Wan and Anakin. I would have been happy to see more of Jar Jar interact with Anakin in episode 2 as well. Because again, this part of family, right, is you want to be part of a family that really accepts you. And Jar Jar, he's the rejected character of Star Wars, right? And he continues to be in fandom, right? He's a very polarizing force. But Jar Jar is the marginalized of Star Wars. So if you hate Jar Jar, it's because you hate marginalized people. There, I said it. That's hard. That's harsh. But to some degree, that's true. That's the element Jar Jar brings to Star Wars, right? Is he represents everything we can't stand, you know, the things that annoy us. And, you know, our lack of acceptance of Jar Jar, it's not a good thing. It's not a good thing if you really, really hate Jar Jar. I get it if like Jar Jar doesn't work for you. Like that can make sense. He is a goofy character compared to everything else in Star Wars. But what Jar Jar represents is, again, just something innocent and good. And I think Jar Jar latches on to, again, just like even just focusing on Anakin. And Anakin really accepts Jar Jar, too. You know, and that starts when he's a little boy. And it continues up until he's a Jedi Knight, right? I mean, he never rejects Jar Jar. And no. That acceptance of Jar Jar, it typifies what a family ought to do for each other, right? Families accept each other for who they are, you know, goofballs and all.
He's your crazy uncle or crazy cousin, you know, in a sense. You know, he's the one that, you know, everyone's like, oh, gosh, do we have to invite them? Yes. Yes, you do. He's part of the family.
But he loves you. Like, he loves you, right?
Exactly. You know, he does. And he's so grateful to be accepted because he's been banished. He's been somebody who's been ousted from his own society for basically being clumsy. I mean, that's the way he would put it. It's a little bit more than that, granted, but he's been ousted from his own society. He's been banished and turned his back on by his own people. They don't even want him. And so when Qui-Gon and Anakin come along and they accept him and he becomes part of this little crew that goes into Mos Espa with Qui-Gon and Padme and R2 to, you know, find the plans and everything. You know, Qui-Gon looks out for him and Anakin latches onto him as a friend. And it's funny because at the beginning of Attack of the Clones, Jar Jar is the one Anakin confides in about his unease about his, you know, reintroduction to Padme here. He's like, oh, she barely even looked at me. I thought about her for 10 years, every day for 10 years, and she barely even recognized me.
Forgotten me completely.
Yeah, forgot me completely. And Jar Jar's like, she's happy that Misa's seen her in a longer time. And so Jar Jar tries to comfort him.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah. You're focusing on the negative, Anakin. Be mindful of your thoughts. She was pleased.
And Obi-Wan wasn't supposed to hear that part of the conversation.
She was pleased to see us.
Right.
I love that. but no, I'm sorry. I cut you off, though, and you're making a great point. Yes, he's comforting Anakin.
Yeah, but so he's – and he's accepted by Anakin. And so that's one of those things where, you know, he finds a new family because not only is he now friends with Anakin, but he also works with Padme, who is probably one of the most sophisticated and smart senators of the time. And she likes him. You know, she finds him, you know, goofy, I'm sure. But she likes having him around and she's, you know – she entrusts him with what to do when she has to leave, you know, maybe wisely or unwisely, but she entrusts him with it, you know, whether or not it's within his abilities or not. We can debate that at a later time. But he's become part of this group. And it's really kind of nice to see that even when somebody is completely shunned by their own family, their own people, that he's accepted by another family in Star Wars. So
yeah. Well, you know, when I think of Jar Jar too, if Anakin and Padme had told Jar Jar they were married, he would have been so happy for them. He wouldn't have been like, oh, you're a Jedi, you're not supposed to do that. You're a senator, you're not supposed to. He wouldn't care. Like,
no.
Because he knows what it's like to be rejected. But I also, so I was just thinking, like, it wouldn't have been, a part of me was like, oh, it wouldn't have been shocking to maybe see Jar Jar as one of the witnesses at their wedding rather than two droids. Or even him with the two droids. But the thing is Jar Jar wouldn't be able to keep a secret. That's the thing,
nope,
right? Like, that's why they wouldn't tell him, because
exactly.
Jar Jar would just be so excited he'd blather it to somebody, right?
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, he you're right. He would get so excited, he'd start jumping around and cheering and, you know, saying, oh, this is, you know, oh, my, me loved about you, you know, that sort of thing. And
he'd
run out the door and tell everybody within earshot, you know? And that's why they didn't tell him.
Right, exactly. Exactly. Well, let's take a stab at the OT, which of course has a lot of this.
Oh yeah.
You know, again, similar to Obi-Wan and Anakin is Han and Chewie. Again, kind of these brothers in arms, and they always have each other's back. Right. I mean, they're flying around on the Falcon and that's their house and their family. It's, I don't know that they're necessarily siblings or what exactly they are, but they are definitely family because, you know, Chewie has a life debt to Han, but I think Han also has a debt to Chewie.
They've become best friends. You know, they're partners in crime. They're they're family in the sense that they're always together and they're always doing stuff, and they really – and they have each other's back all the time. You know, they're not necessarily brothers. They're not – you know, there's not that sort of relationship, but they're partners in crime. They're best friends. They know what each other is thinking because they've been together for so long. And they've formed their own little family out of that. You know, they don't need anybody else at the beginning of A New Hope. You know, they don't need Luke or Obi-Wan or Leia to hang around. You know, they're fine on their own. But thankfully they decide to open up and, you know, let some folks in. But, you know, they're definitely self-sufficient at first. And obviously we see them continue to be, you know, connected at the hip, so to speak, throughout the rest of the OT, which makes what happens in The Force Awakens so much more heartbreaking when you just see Chewie go on a rampage after Han gets killed. So
yeah. Yeah. And then, you know, the biggest friendship of families is Han, Luke, and Leia. And yes, Luke and Leia are technically they are related.
Yes.
But I think
they don't know that at first.
Right. And the three of them, you know, even at the beginning of Empire, they're a family unit. They're bickering like a family. Well, Han and Leia are. Even Han and Luke,
bickering like an old married couple already.
Yeah. Right. And this is, I mean, those three characters. And again, I mean, I love at the end of Return of the Jedi when Luke comes walking in, he gives Leia that big hug, and then she kind of like passes him off to Han, and Han pulls him in for that big hug. I mean, yeah. That right there is that's the family unit of Star Wars in the OT. Yeah.
Yes,
and they completely they accept each other, but they challenge each other to be better.
Oh,
that's the thing, right? Like they never rudely. Harshly judge one another. Like, yes, they make quips at each other, Han and Leia specifically. But the thing is the reason that even happens is because they know they could be better, right?
Right.
Han brings out a goodness in Leia. Like, Leia is a good character, right? Like, she's strong. She's working for, you know, she's working hard to bring justice to the galaxy. But Han humanizes her in a way she needs.
That's the word. He brings her out of the clouds, out of her own head, and he enables her to connect.
Yeah.
On a relationship, in a relational and emotional level. Because otherwise she would be just completely laser focused, all up in her head all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Which is why she comes off cold sometimes. Not just because she's in Hoth. But you're right. You know, he's able to help her connect. He humanizes her. And Luke, conversely, brings out the good and the noble in Han.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Han's, you know, the scoundrel. He's sort of, you know, off doing his own thing. He doesn't necessarily need to do the right thing. He doesn't feel compelled to do what's good all the time, you know, as long as he gets out of everything okay. But Luke comes along, and Luke's this, you know, pure, innocent little farm boy who brings out the noble qualities in Han. So.
Right. Yeah. And they're all better people because of the family they create.
Yes.
I mean, Han does good things because he cares about them. Right. He goes back into the command center on Echo Base because he cares about Leia. He doesn't really care about sticking around to win this fight, but he cares about Leia. Uh-huh. He goes out into the freezing cold Hoth tundra because his friend is out there. Right.
Yeah.
You know, and he's not going to leave until that guy is OK. You know, that's what family does is you again, like we said it kind of earlier on, you know, you put other things on the line because your friends need you. Your family needs you.
It's ironic. Han and Anakin have very similar ways of looking at things. You know, the cause isn't quite so important to either of them. It's the people involved in those causes.
Right. That's a good point.
I've never made that connection. In almost 6 years of podcasting, this is the first time I've made that connection.
I was thinking of that as I was talking. Yeah, like that's exactly how Anakin is.
Yeah.
But yeah. Anyway, so let's hop into some of the Disney families we've gotten recently, and I think the biggest one is the Ghost Crew.
Yes,
right in Rebels, you know, and that one's very blatant. Like Hera and Kanan often use language like we're the parents; those are our kids, right? Specifically,
right.
Ezra and Sabine. Not so much Zeb. Zeb is like the crazy uncle, the fun uncle, or the
yes,
you know. But Kanan and Hera really, Hera says it on several occasions that, you know, this is a family. We do this because we're family. Mm-hmm. And that's certainly how Kanan feels. I mean, to the extent that, right, initially, like when they're going to get involved in the rebel cause, Kanan is so reluctant initially because he's seen the effects of war and he finally has a family. He has a family, right? In a way, his family was the Jedi Order and that was taken from him. So Kanan, you know, whether he was going to admit it or not, but Kanan was looking for something like that in his life, right? He needed
yes.
a family to make up for what he lost after Order 66 and the death of Depa Balaba. You know, I purposely left out certain Jedi relationships because I don't think that they're really familial. It's something different. But that mm-hmm. being said, like as just a young Padawan, that was his family.
Yeah.
And it was taken from
him. The Jedi Order as a whole is kind of seen as a family, you know, in a sort of a large sense, you know, similar to the way I'm going to bring it back to a religious sense in the way that anyone who follows a certain religion, Christianity is the one that I'm familiar with, we're supposed to, you know, view each other with. And we're all part of this family of God sort of thing. And in a sense, the Jedi Order is kind of like that, but especially at this point in time that we're witnessing and interacting with that, it's sort of, you know, hit and miss in that regard. You know, it's family in a sense that everybody goes home to the temple at the end of the day, after their missions are done. That's the home base. They're all sort of, you know, can connect with each other on that kind of a level, but the closeness and the connections aren't necessarily there.
Right. Yeah. I love the Ghost Crew. Like they're
yes.
some of my favorite characters in all of Star Wars. And specifically yeah. the Ghost to me is second only to the Millennium Falcon for my favorite ship. And one, yes, it's the look of it. It is really cool looking. Although I will say initially I wasn't that taken with it, but it's more about the fact that it's a character like the Falcon. But more than that, it's a home for
yeah.
characters that are a family. And something that we see specifically among this family is the Ghost Crew, they provide this space for self-discovery and growth and healing, right? So we see that specifically with Ezra. Both Kanan and Hera are very invested. You know, Kanan in one way, Hera in different ways, but they're both invested in helping Ezra grow as a person. Kanan
yeah.
specifically with him becoming potentially a Jedi Knight. But Hera also sees him as, you know, a lost boy who needs the same thing Kanan needed in a way.
Right.
And, you know, Sabine is somewhat sisterly with Ezra on at times, even though I think Ezra still has a thing for her.
Right.
but, you know, they also provide healing. Like they're always there for Ezra when he breaks down about his family. There, and to me still one of the most powerful things I've ever seen in Rebels is when Kanan is training Sabine with the Darksaber.
Oh my
God. And he opens up for her all of the wounds of her past. But he does it in a very loving, compassionate way. He doesn't force it out. He lets it come out naturally and it is aggressive and he's willing to take all of that on so that she can be honest about it and then heal from it. I love that episode. I was like in tears the first time I watched it just because of how beautiful it was. And again, this is a cartoon, right? Like it's not some big dramatic movie. This is a cartoon that was so chock full of emotion that again, Kanan is like, he's just a wonderful father who, you know, like walks up into, you know, his daughter is crying because maybe her heart's just been broken for the first time, and he lets her just unload on him and takes all that on so that she can heal from it. You know, that's what a good parent does.
I remember, you know, seeing where that episode was going to go, because we kind of had an idea that that was going to happen. She was going to have to go off and train. And I was like, so we're going to get an entire episode of just this training thing? Okay, we'll see how that goes. And I wasn't overly anticipating, you know, that episode to be so good. And then it's one of the standout episodes of season 3 by far. It's so good. It's such a good episode. So if you haven't watched Rebels, or if you've missed some of Rebels, make sure you've seen that episode, because it is one of the most powerful moments that we've gotten in Rebels on an emotional level. It's very, very good. And it's possibly the only time we've ever really seen Sabine open up.
Right.
And it's because she's almost forced to confront these things. So,
yeah. So, you know, again, like I said, I mean, this ghost crew, they really personify what a good family does for each other. And, right, they support each other, they care about each other, and they encourage each other to grow, and they're there for each other in those growing pains. I love the Ghost Crew.
Me too. And I'm, on the one hand, really excited and really apprehensive for what's about to happen with season 4. I'm so excited because we get to see Rebels again. We get to see these characters again. But I'm just like, what's going to happen to them? I don't want them to splinter. I don't want them to, I want them to stay a family forever. But, you know, the likelihood of that is not good, unfortunately.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we know Hera and Chopper at least survive till Rogue
yes.
One. You know, the only other quick thing I want to mention, just because I think it is there, you know, in Force Awakens, I would say in some small way, Rey and Finn represent a new forming family, right? I mean, I don't know, it's kind of a loose way, you know, because I think Finn initially is just attracted to her. But they do have a strong commitment to each other. I don't think Finn goes back to get her just because he's got a thing for her, right? Like, you don't do that for somebody you're crushing on. You don't walk into enemy territory, which they've taken a great deal of time to show us how petrified Finn is of the First Order, right?
Yeah.
Like, they scare the pants off of him, but yet he goes into Starkiller Base to save Rey, right? Like, that's I think that's stronger than a crush.
Yeah, well, part of it is she's the first person to really talk to him and treat him like a person and not just FN-2187.
Don't forget Poe. Poe gave him the name.
Well, true, but he thought he lost Poe.
Right, true.
So, which, of course, is probably the best bromance in all of Star Wars, let's be honest.
Yes.
I wish we all – I'm pretty sure all of us wish we could – we could be in a bromance with Poe Dameron.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, pretty much.
No doubt about that.
Mm-mm.
But no, the last thing I want to mention though is Rogue One.
Yes.
The Rogue One crew, in a way, I think, again, represents a family unit. It's a different kind of family.
Yeah. And this is one forged in fire.
Yeah. Yeah. And I don't know. It's not like they take a long time building the relationships between them, right? I mean, there's not a ton of interaction with them together as a group, and when they do, they're almost like arguing. But what's more than a family than arguments? you know, again, it just feels like a family when they fly off to Scarif. And they're all departing to go do their own things, though. They give us, even just in those brief moments, this sense of, like, all of, you know, Kanan, Cassian, Jyn, Chirrut, Baze.
Kanan?
Kanan, sorry. I just wish he was there. but, right, like, all of them, you know, they really feel something for each other.
Yeah.
And I don't have a ton to say about the Rogue One crew, but you know, again, it just the fact that they're giving us that still in Star Wars, like it's such a big part of Star Wars, is giving us some sense of family needs to be
right.
There.
It and it's not something at this point terribly deep because they haven't had the time together, but it is definitely something that's strong and something that they all definitely share. It is something forged in fire. It's definitely something, you know, in a very real sense that soldiers experience. You know, they are all soldiers. They're all fighting a war, their own battles, and they have to come together to face a common goal. And that forges them into this family unit that then sort of decides kind of on its own to take on this impossible mission because it's the right thing to do. And because they've, you know, they don't have to really say much, but they know they've got each other's backs. They're watching out for each other. They believe in each other. And that's enough. That's enough for these people at this time. And it's not something that, you know, is terribly deep for many of them, but it's a sense of connection and a sense of belonging that they've all forged together, and it's enough for them.
Mm-hmm.
To band together and to take on one last impossibility. You know, sort of for old time's sake, in a sense, you know, and it's very much, you know, a reality of things that happen in wartime with the men on your right and the men on your left sort of thing. You know, you get to trust them. You may not necessarily like them, but you get to trust them.
Right. So. Well, you know what? I'm an idiot. I almost can't believe I forgot this, too.
Did you forget?
Jin and Cassian and Galen. Hello.
You mean Jin and Galen.
Thank you. What did I say?
Is it Cassian and Galen?
Good Lord. It's been a long day. but yes, and you know, we've talked about this before. And God, I keep forgetting. I think it was Bobby Gordon who sent us this email, which was he articulated this so well. And if it wasn't Bobby, I'm sorry to whoever it was. But if it was you, Bobby, thank you again. But he made this great point of this chain reaction of love that starts with Galen and Jin, right? And it ignites the galaxy. You know, it's this chain of events, right? That love for his daughter causes him to put this flaw in the Death Star and reach out to her to exploit that. She passes it on. It gets to the Skywalker kids, who then are confronted with their father unbeknownst to them. And then that love just keeps right rippling out. I'm not doing justice to what he said, but again, I think I made the point earlier, but right in Rogue One though, we get this again, a family that is torn apart, right? In the prologue of the movie, the family is torn apart, and Jin finds family with the Rogue One crew after she realizes her family is now utterly gone. Right. I mean, she sees her mother killed, and then she holds her dying father, who she really wanted back in her life. And, you know, even Cassian says to her, you know, he's gone. There's nothing you can do, right? As he like kind of drags her away. And then, of course, my favorite part of Rogue One is when, you know, she says, I'm not used to people sticking around when things go bad. Welcome home, right? Like Cassian mm-hmm. welcomes her into a new family. And family can do powerful things is what Rogue One shows us.
Yes.
So I think we've talked a lot about family.
I think so. Word of the day, family. Oh man, this is a fun discussion. I liked it.
I liked it a lot. I did too. Again, we welcome you all to share your thoughts on what you think about family in Star Wars. So as always, you know, share what you think.
Mm-hmm. But Carl, before we start wrapping this up, we had a new poll here that you wanted to give us, and I want to let you take this on because this is based off of the episode you and Greg did not too long ago.
Right, and we'll be doing part two next week. So, get ready for that. So if you enjoyed that first episode of The Essential Elements of Star Wars, part two will be coming out next week. Greg and I are going to meet up again next week to sit down and record that. Probably won't go as long as the first one. I hope not, because I don't have as flexible a schedule. So anyway. But yes, we're going to continue along with asking you your favorite moments of some of these elements. So our next element is that of spirituality. So we want you to tell us, what is your favorite scene in Star Wars that evokes spirituality for you? And again, that doesn't have to be something religious. If you're not a religious person, I think we can all admit, though, that there is something spiritual about Star Wars. But when you think of spirituality in Star Wars, what scene is the first thing that comes to mind for you? So we invite you to share that with us.
Excellent. I've got quite a few rattling around, and I'm going to have to come up with a final answer before next week. that's going to be hard. But as always, if you want to weigh in on the poll, if you want to weigh in on this topic or anything else, we definitely, definitely want you to do that. We encourage it. And Carl, where can they do all that?
Well, they can do it on Facebook, facebook.com/WampusLairPodcast. Follow us on Twitter at WampusLair. Shoot us an email, WampusLairPodcast@gmail.com. And if you are able to, we invite you to support us over on Patreon, patreon.com/WampusLairPodcast. We still have not gotten up to, we want to get to $120 of raised Patreon amount. And I will start releasing once a month the Skywalker Tales feature for all of our patrons. Doesn't matter what tier you're in. So if you want to help us release that particular segment, we help ask you to help us get up. I think we're only $8 away, so we're very close. And also, starting up next week as well, we're going to do our first scene-by-scene commentary of Star Wars for those of you in our third-tier element of Patreon. So get ready for our first scene-by-scene breakdown. But before we even jump into that, we want you, whether you're on Patreon or not, to tell us what movie you'd like us to start with. If you're not on Patreon and you vote in, you might want to think about donating so you can hear that episode. But, you know, we invite you guys to write in which movie you'd like us to start with, because we don't care.
Right. We'll start with what you want us to start with.
Yes.
Anything else, Carl?
That'll do it, my brother.
All right. Well, my brother. Ooh, there's another one. I forgot. that's okay. That one wasn't necessarily a nice relationship. Well, that will wrap up this episode of the Wampus Lair Podcast. It's been episode number 244, Family in Star Wars. For Carl, I'm Jason, your Wampus Lair parents, I suppose. and we will see you next time here in the Wampus Lair. Thank you.